Good morning. It is Tuesday, June 6th at 9 a.m. We are here in the State Capitol Building, Room 412, for the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting. My name is Bob Slaar. I'm chairman of the commission, and I'm joined this morning with Commissioners Johnson and Hansen. We have three agenda items on the ad hoc meeting agenda. The first one we're going to take is CE06002. Then we're going to take the rulemaking, and then we're going to come back to the natural gas proceedings. So we'll take them in that order. First thing I'll do is I'll check to see. There's a couple people who said they would phone in. Doug Idol?
He is not able to, but this is Joanne Horman, and I am sitting in on his behalf.
Okay, great. Thanks, Joanne. And then Colleen Siebold?
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Is anyone else joining us telephonically? All right, the first agenda item under consumer complaints, CE06002, in the matter of the complaint filed by Sioux Valley Southwestern Energy, Electric Cooperative, Inc., doing business as Sioux Valley Energy, against Northern States Power Company, doing business as Xcel, regarding provision of electric service to Merle and Roy's Paving. And the question is today, shall the commission grant the petition for intervention? Ms. Griff.
I would look to the parties to see if they have any comments first.
Good morning.
My name is Darla Rogers, and I represent SDREA. We have filed the petition to intervene. To my knowledge, I don't believe there's anyone objecting to it. I believe the petition speaks for itself, and we would ask that the petition be granted.
Thank you. Is there anyone else appearing for the parties? Seeing none, does staff have a position?
No. Again, staff hasn't heard any objection to the intervention and would recommend granting of it.
Thank you. Any commissioner questions, comments? Seeing none, then I will move the commission grant the petition for intervention to SDREA.
Second. I concur.
Next item is the rulemaking. Skipping the natural gas item for now. It's a rulemaking, RM06001, in the matter of the adoption of rules regarding eligibility, certification, and reporting requirements for eligible telecommunications carriers. And the question today is, shall the commission adopt the final rules? I think what I'll do, Ms. Wiest, is turn it over to you and see how you want to go about this procedurally.
Thank you. This is Rolaine Wiest. And what I would like to do is I would like to briefly go through the recommended changes, and then if the commissioners want, they can ask for if any parties have any comments on those recommendations.
That sounds good. Thank you.
And I won't go through all the minor changes that didn't change any substance. So if you just start with 2010-32-43.01. For one of the first changes I made was to subparagraph 2. At SDTA's suggestion, I changed it from reasonable cost to does not impose excessive or unreasonable cost. The other changes I made were based on suggestions by Unicell and were designed to make the rule more technologically neutral. And I don't think I need to go through all those. And the other one that I made is to subparagraph 1, also I believe by Unicell, is I put in proposed designated service area in that one. For the next rule, I'll just mention that I actually didn't make one of the changes for 43.02. I did not change the reference to wire center in this rule. A number of them wanted to have a service area basis, but the FCC did have wire center also, and I understand that improvements can be made on a wider than a wire service center basis, but I think those can easily be explained. I did make one change to subparagraph 1, and I added in service quality in addition to right before signal quality. For 43.03, at the request of STTA, I added the word transport before damage, right after damage, so it'd be damaged transport facilities. That just makes it clear that we're not expecting rerouting for local loops. For 43.04, there was discussion about the CTIA code. What I did is I just deleted the reference, all references to that code, because I think if you just look at the top part, it says that each carrier must satisfy applicable consumer protection and service quality standards. So even with the deletion to the CTIA, the commission could still find that compliance with the CTIA could still meet the standards. So it just ends after that first sentence now. The next change I made was, well, going to 0.05, I didn't change the comparable language. I think the commission can decide that on a case-by-case basis, whether local usage plans are comparable. For 43.06, I think Altel and Unicell brought this up, that it wouldn't be the commission that would require equal access. And so what I did is I just said that the carrier shall certify it will be able to provide equal access, and I deleted all references to who would make that requirement on them. For 43.07, the public interest standard, at Mid-Continent and SDTA suggestion, I added back in what the commission had decided in previous ETC rulings. So now we have the impact of multiple designations on the Universal Service Fund, commitments made regarding quality of service, applicants' ability to provide services within a reasonable time frame, and the consideration of whether the designation will have detrimental effects on the provision of universal service by the incumbent. For 44, I think Unicell wanted that. I had deleted, let's see, for this one. I had deleted that rule, and I think Unicell wanted back in. What I did is I just changed to designations previously granted by the commission and took out prior to the effective date of the rule, since there'll be two effective dates now. I didn't make any changes to 45, 46, 47. So if we go to 48, so paragraph 1, in the last sentence of subparagraph 1, I changed it back to a copy of the petition. This is concerning relinquishment, will be provided to each local service provider as opposed to all telecommunications companies. And then at the request of, I think, Vantage Point and SDTA, I added in the last sentence, and that's directly actually from, I think, rule and statute, that the commission shall establish a time not to exceed 1 year after the commission approves such relinquishment within which such purchase or construction shall be completed. Okay, I didn't make any changes to 49, 51, and I didn't make any changes to 52. Some people had requested that we put it off for a year, but I still left in August 1st, 2006, and I still have it for the June, for the filings thereafter, June 1st. I didn't make any changes to 53, to 54. In the first line at Mid-Continent suggestion, I said provide information on a calendar year basis. So all of this will be on a calendar year basis. Added in service quality to subparagraph 1. At SDTA's, I believe at SDTA's suggestion, I took out potentially for the outage reports in paragraph 2. And I will mention that I did not delete that rule and just rely on the FCC outage report, as a number of commenters just wanted to get rid of that. Because going through the FCC's order, the FCC's order specifically rejected that they would use their outage report requirements, because those requirements only apply to outages affecting over 900,000 user minutes. So I left it in. And there were a number of questions about subparagraph 4, about what complaints needed to be reported. And what I did is I just said the number of complaints the ETC complaint department has received from the consumers for the previous calendar year. Again, in subparagraph 8, I again made that so it wouldn't be the commission that would require equal access. And then for 55, I made a change to clarify that this only applies to customers residing in the carrier's designated service area. Toward the end of that rule, I deleted the word detailed in front of report for the outreach efforts. And at the request of someone else, I made the March date, changed that to June so it would be consistent with the other requirements. And then what I did is I added in a rule at the end for a waiver requirements. I believe this was that the suggestion of one of our, we call them foreign local exchange companies. The question is whether they would have to do all of these things if they were doing that in other states. And so I made, and another was from SDTA who wanted more flexibility with certification requirements. So I put in a rule that just stated that if the commission would find a certification requirement to be unduly burdensome or unnecessary, the commission could grant a waiver of that. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. And I should say thanks just to you and staff and the parties for working on the rules, and you know, a substantial amount of time went into it, and obviously it affects tens of millions of dollars, so it's an important process. So thank you for the hard work on that. If it's appropriate this time, should we take comments from any of the parties if they have them?
I think they can certainly make comments at this point.
And certainly, if you have no comments, that's fine as well. Seeing no one here in Pierre, does anyone on the phone line have additional comments? Hearing none, why don't we open up for commissioner questions or comments?
Looking on page, bottom of 8, top of 9, section 43.04, in the last draft I saw it, I didn't have a problem taking out CTIA, but now I wonder as I'm reading this, will it be clear? I mean, legally, is it clear that it's the commission that determines what is applicable as far as applicable consumer protection and service quality standards?
I think it is, because all these rules go back to the commission. Actually, they have to demonstrate this to the commission. Mm-hmm. So I think that the commission makes the final decision as to whether they're actually satisfying the applicable consumer ones. And if they would say, well, this is the applicable, but we would disagree that it's something else, it would be the commission's decision that would be the one that would be carried forward in any type of order approving an ATC designation or certification.
Okay, great, thanks. That's all I've got.
Thank you. And if those type of codes change, then I assume everything just continues on. And would it be in a revised format, or is it as of the date of the rules?
I think since we just said applicable consumer protection,
right,
then I think it's easier to say it'd be the ones that were in effect at the time that the commission would be making its decision.
And I think you're right on that, and I think that probably makes the most sense. So
it just would be give us more leeway, I guess, to
as things evolve and so on and so forth. Any other questions or comments from commissioners? If not, do we have a motion?
I move that we approve the adopt the final rules.
Second.
And I concur. Then the final item on the agenda is natural gas, NG06003. In the matter of the filing by Northwestern Corporation doing business as Northwestern Energy for approval of a contract with deviations with Prairie Ethanol Plant. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the contract with deviations with Prairie Ethanol Plant? And I should note, Commissioner Hansen has recused himself from this matter, and Commissioner Johnson and I are still here. The procedurally, Mr. Smith, how do we want to go forth?
I think we'll just proceed and let Mr. Decker, some of the filings that you've made are confidential. And so if we get to a point where any of the confidential material is going to be discussed, we will have to go into closed session. And I guess we'll just have to sort of rely on Jeff and Dave to let us
know. You are the only person in the meeting now.
If that happens. I think we're done with the phone. So what we have
that's Jeff's background music for a presentation. He's going to try to lull us to sleep.
Didn't know you were a funeral director. I think we'll just have to remember the Internet if that occurs, and you guys will have to just let us know. And then I think we should come back, we'll come back into public session for the vote if we get to that point. Okay.
That sounds good. Big thing is to remind the commissioners, because we actually have to push a button here to turn off the Internet. So if we get into confidential information, that's what we're going to want to do. So, Mr. Decker, if you'll proceed. Thank you.
All right. I'm just going to keep my comments general, and if you have specific questions, we can go the confidential route. As many of you know, Prairie Ethanol is in the process of building a 60-million-gallon ethanol plant by Loomis, South Dakota. And this requires Northwestern to build a 14-mile pipeline to serve this customer. And the cost of that pipeline is going to be is included in the rate that we're requesting deviation for over the next 10 years. So that cost will be recovered over the next 10 years as part of the rate. The rate also covers the direct costs, as well as leaving some margin and some contribution to overheads to help other customers. So it's a benefit to the Northwestern system. There's two facets really to this project. Number one is the construction of the 14-mile pipeline. The other facet is the fact that Mitchell is short on capacity. And in order to make this project a reality, that capacity's got to be increased. It's rare that things come together, but the timing on this seems to be good. in that the ethanol plant and the Mitchell capacity both have a need. So we can, those two entities plus Northern Natural Gas can work together along with Northwestern to solve the problem and provide the gas that the ethanol plant needs. So in addition, NNG will be building a compressor station and town border station in order to meet the capacity needs of the ethanol plant. And in addition, that will make capacity available for future growth for the city of Mitchell. Without that, we're projecting between 2008-2011, the capacity will be gone from that line, and there would not be opportunity for the city of Mitchell to have businesses come in that require significant amounts of natural gas. So with the construction of this town border station and of this compressor, that will alleviate that problem. I guess without getting into the specific numbers, that basically covers the project and the things that need to happen in order for this to come to pass.
Thank you very much. Mr. Jacobson?
Yes, we have reviewed the filing, and since the initial filing, there was significant work done on trying to make this work. But in the end result has been that we do find a rate appropriate, and we would recommend approval with the condition that the company report all the costs of constructing the pipeline extension to the customer upon completion of the project, and that this approval does not predetermine a commission decision on retreatment of any possible revenue shortfall at the time of the next rate case.
Thank you. Any other additional comments from staff? Mr. Decker, I'm curious, if I'm missing your presentation, my apologies. With the additional capacity, do you have any projections on, you know, how it looks going forward for Mitchell? I mean, you say that they're going to have the ability to add new customers. I mean, does this overbuild it by a significant amount, or, you know, how do you feel about the future looking out the next decade or so?
Northwestern has purchased a part of this capacity. The ethanol plant takes a significant amount, or about half the capacity that's becoming available. Northwestern is contracted for about probably 20 to 25% of that capacity. Then there's an additional amount of capacity that's available on the open market. There's a significant amount of capacity available. Could we do another Mitchell ethanol plant or another Prairie ethanol plant? Maybe. There may be enough capacity available to do two of these. If that was the case, that would pretty well utilize what the compressor station is going to add. Assuming you pick up normal manufacturing businesses or Walmarts or Cabela's or whatever, I think the number we came up with, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, but I think with what Northwestern contracted, we could cover 20 more Walmarts. So it gives you an idea of the amount of capacity available.
Yes, Mr. Jacobson.
Yeah, I would just add one thing, that this approval today only addresses the pipeline extension to the ethanol plant. The compressor station and related allocations of capacity are a purchase gas adjustment item, and we are in the process of reviewing that, but this approval does not. If staff would find nothing wrong with that treatment that goes along with the compressor station, probably would not come before the commission. That would be an automatic pass-through of gas costs and related transportation. But we are, the company is supplying us with information, and we are in the process of reviewing that. So the commission may or may not have to make any decision on that in the future.
And where's the compressor station being located?
I'm not exactly sure where that specific location is.
Is it, I mean, do you know, is it relatively close to Mitchell? Or?
Yes, yes, okay. It is. It was a couple miles of Mitchell.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yep. Other commissioner questions?
I have some questions about the agreement between the ethanol plant and Northwestern, specifically about letter of credit. Is that confidential to the point where we should go into closed session?
I guess it depends on what your specific questions are.
Well, better to be safe than sorry, probably.
Yeah.
One never knows where things lead. So.
Other than that, you have to go whisper it in his ear.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we go into closed session for the purposes of discussing this docket item and confidential information filed with the commission.
And I will second it. And question for staff, if we turn this button off and then come out of confidential, is it going to, can we just turn it right back on? Do we know? Is it as simple as that, do you think? You should be able to. Okay, great. Well, let's we have a motion second. We'll go into confidential session. those listening in on the Internet, we have just come out of executive sessions, or executive session. Motion by Chairman Saar, second by Commissioner Johnson. Do I have any additional comments either from Northwestern or staff, or is anyone else in the room? Yes,
Commissioner Rislov. This is Greg Rislov. If I can make a comment, Dave noted that the costs were estimated of this project. I believe Jeff mentioned that as well. I think Dave also mentioned that whatever decision is made today, the ultimate decision will have to come in a future rate case. And one thing that hasn't been mentioned, and maybe it's obvious that's why, is that this construction cost could deviate to some extent from the estimates we've seen, which would change whatever contribution numbers that we have in front of us on this latest spreadsheet. So I just want to reinforce the notion that, you know, we talked about benefits of this compressor station for the residents of Mitchell, regardless of whether or not the ethanol plant is operating. And there's some other issues that have to be considered, but certainly one of those issues will be the final cost of this plant and whatever contribution or margin the commissioners will consider in the next rate case to be appropriate. Just want to solidify that point.
Okay, understood.
Thank you. Any additional comments from commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Johnson.
I just have a question for Mr. Jacobson. Mr. Decker mentioned that there would be this rate was not set so low as to mean that there wasn't a contribution to margin and some contribution to the system. Is that, I presume, since staff is supporting this filing, that that's your belief as well?
Yes, sir. I mean, there is a contribution the way we analyzed it. So.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Going once, going twice? Then I will move that the Commission approve the contract with deviations with the Prairie Ethanol Plant subject to the conditions and restrictions set forth by or recommended by staff.
Second.
And that concludes the agenda of the ad hoc meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.